On this episode of ID the Future, two senior researchers at the Evolutionary Informatics Lab, Dr. Robert Marks and Dr. Winston Ewart, discuss evolutionary informatics, algorithmic specified complexity, and how information makes evolution work. This is the first of three podcasts exploring these issues.
Today we have with us Dr. Winston Ewart, and we're going to be talking about algorithmic specified complexity and some of the recent work of the Evolutionary Informatics Lab in this area. Dr. Ewart has a PhD from Baylor University. He has written a lot on the general area of evolutionary informatics and algorithmic specified complexity. He is a senior researcher at the Evolutionary Informatics Lab and a senior research scientist at the Biologic Institute. Welcome, Winston. How are you doing today?
Good to be here.
Okay, excellent. We're going to be talking about three of your papers, and let me just mention them up front. The first one is Winston Ewart, Bill Dembski, and Robert Marks, that's me, entitled Algorithmic Specified Complexity in Engineering, and it's a chapter in the book, Engineering the Ultimate, an Interdisciplinary Investigation of Order and Design in Nature and Craft. It's available on Amazon.com if you'd like to take a look. And all these papers, by the way, are at evoinfo.org, evoinfo.org, so you can always go there and download a copy. The second one is Winston Ewart, William Dembski, and Robert Marks, Algorithmic Specified Complexity in the Game of Life, which was an archival journal publication, peer-reviewed in the IEEE Transactions on Systems, Man, and Cybernetics. That appeared just last year, April 2015. And the third one is also in a archival peer-reviewed journal, Winston Ewart, William Dembski, Robert Marks. Same authors here over and over and over again, huh?
There's a theme, yes.
There's a theme, yes. Measuring Meaningful Information in Images, Algorithmic Specified Complexity. And that was published in the IET Computer Vision Journal in 2015. So with your permission, Dr. Ewart, let's talk about certain aspects of specified complexity. I think it was Bill Dembski who introduced specified complexity a while back. Could you just define specified complexity? And does your definition of algorithmic or specified complexity differ from Bill's version?
Sure. Specified complexity is trying to answer the question, when an event is so improbable that we think it shouldn't happen. So this is motivated by things like Mount Rushmore and Mount Fuji. So if we look at Mount Rushmore and there's all these presidents' heads carved into the rock, and intuitively say, well, okay, that's not just wind and erosion or geological processes that produce mountains that have presidents' heads on them. Someone went and carved that. And we say it's too improbable to have happened by random chance or by the natural processes happening there. But then if we go to Mount Fuji, Mount Fuji looks like a bunch of rocks. Mount Fuji is not really any less probable than Mount Rushmore. That particular configuration of rocks you would find at Mount Fuji is equally as improbable as the configuration of rocks that make up the faces of Mount Rushmore. So why can we say that Mount Rushmore is not fitting with natural processes, but Mount Fuji is? And it was Dembski's insight to say, well, the reason we can say this is because of specification. And specification is the idea that there's an independent pattern. So Mount Rushmore is an example of specified complexity, and it's complex because it's improbable. It's really unlikely that that particular configuration would exist, and it's also specified because that pattern fits an independent pattern. It looks like presidents' heads. It looks like these famous people we already know, and that's why we're able to say it exhibits specified complexity.
What then are some of the differences between your model and Dr. Dembski's model?
Dembski initially defined specified complexity in his books, The Design Inference and No Free Lunch, primarily. But in 2005, he published a paper called Specification, the Pattern that Signifies Intelligence. And that paper somewhat introduces a simplification and update of the notion of specified complexity. And what I've tried to do really is draw some further extensions on that. So one of the things that's different is that algorithmic specified complexity explicitly considers a context. So the idea is the things that exhibit patterns for you depend on the background knowledge you have. So you see Mount Rushmore and it exhibits specified complexity from your perspective, partially because you already know who these presidents are and you recognize their faces on that mountain. And so that's the context. It's information you already know, which affects what degree you think things are specified. It also changes up somewhat about how we actually measure specification. So from the earliest days of specified complexity, Dembski has had the notion of using something called Kolmogorov complexity to measure specification. Now, Kolmogorov basically means, what is the length of the shortest computer program that can, when you run it, would output a description of the object in question? Of course, that's perhaps a more technical definition than most people would prefer to use. So we can think of it as essentially being, how many words would it take to describe the object? And so if it would take a lot of words to describe the object in enough detail that you could reconstruct the object, then we say that it has high Kolmogorov complexity because it takes a lot of words to describe that object. If you could describe the object in only a few words, that means it has low Kolmogorov complexity. Now, the reason this is relevant is because if I say, okay, an object has low Kolmogorov complexity, it has a short description, the only way an object can have such a short description is because it follows a pattern. In other words, because it exhibits specification. And if I have to use a lot of words to describe pattern and there's no shorter description, that means it doesn't really follow a pattern, and that means it's not specified.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I mean, if you consider, for example, a wall which is all black, it's really easy to describe the wall. I just did it very quickly. The whole wall is black.
Okay, that's good. That's pretty short description.
That's a very short
black
description.
Black wall.
Black wall.
And I have it firmly entrenched in my
okay.
mind. Okay,
good. But instead, your wall had a mural painted on it. For you to describe the mural in enough detail that I could exactly recreate the mural would be very difficult.
Say the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, for
sure,
example.
Sure, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel.
Which isn't a wall, it's a ceiling, but we're making this generalization. Okay.
So...
okay.
If you look at the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, there's all these pictures of all these different, I think, primarily biblical events. If you would describe them, it would be very difficult. It would take you a long time to describe the whole thing, and you have to describe it in sufficient detail that you could actually repaint the painting exactly. So we say that has a lot of Kolmogorov complexity. It's very difficult to describe that.
But does Kolmogorov complexity necessarily measure meaning?
So no, Kolmogorov complexity doesn't measure meaning. For one, it's kind of backwards, because if something is completely random, then it has a high amount of Kolmogorov complexity, because it's very hard to describe randomness. The only thing you can do is explicitly list out all the detail, because there's no pattern to randomness. That's what makes it random.
So therefore, if you had on the Sistine Chapel, if somebody just took a paintbrush and just did a bunch of splattering of different colors, it could also have a high Kolmogorov complexity.
That would have a high Kolmogorov complexity. It would be difficult to do that.
Okay.
But as I also mentioned, the Sistine Chapel's got a high Kolmogorov complexity.
Okay.
So those are both things which have somewhat high Kolmogorov complexity. But one of them we'd say, okay, that was designed, that has meaning. And one of them would say, well, no, that's just random paint splatters.
Okay. But they both would have might
they
have
both
the same
have, they both might have
complexity.
Similar Kolmogorov complexity.
So how do you get meaning? How do you get specified complexity out of that?
Right. Well, another branch of information theory is called Shannon information, and this is actually, if someone just refers to information theory, they are almost certainly thinking of Shannon's information theory. The sort of the first part of Shannon's information theory is to define the Shannon self information as the negative log of probability. So,
what does that mean? What does that mean for the non-nerd?
Now, what that means for the non-nerd is the more improbable something is, the more Shannon self-information it has. So if I tell you the sun is going to rise tomorrow, that has a high probability of happening. You already were pretty sure the sun was going to rise tomorrow. So it doesn't have very much information. If I were to tell you that the world was going to end tomorrow, you would think that was a highly improbable event, and that would be conveying a lot of information to you. So it says that information is contingent on the degree of probability. So the less likely an event is, the more information that event carries.
And then you combine these into the idea of algorithmic specified complexity.
That's right. We take the Shannon information and we subtract the Kolmogorov complexity, and that gives us our definition of algorithmic specified complexity.
But it isn't just the Kolmogorov complexity. It is conditioned upon the experience and knowledge of the observer, right?
That's right. It's the conditional Kolmogorov complexity. It's the Kolmogorov complexity of the object given the background context. And that means that when you're describing an object, you can actually use the background knowledge and make reference to that. One way to look at it is if, for example, if you were to read a calculus textbook, and if you didn't know algebra, you would be completely lost because it's dependent on that context. And so if a book wanted to explain to you both calculus and algebra, it would have to be a fairly long book.
But couldn't we say also that with Mount Rushmore, if we didn't have the experience of looking at human heads and say we were from outer space and we were gelatinous, unshapen globs, that we might look at Mount Rushmore and not see any specified complexity?
Right, yes. If you're aliens, may very well be, you would look at Mount Rushmore and it would be indistinguishable to your mind from other mountainsides. It just looks completely random because you have no experience with human heads. And so that's captured by this notion of the context.
Okay. So would you say then that meaningful information or algorithmic specified complexity is kind of in the eye of the beholder?
Somewhat. Some forms of algorithmic specified complexity we can actually show without the existence of a context.
Okay, for example?
For example, a snowflake. So one thing, for example, we say about snowflakes is every snowflake is unique. Why do we say this? Well, we say this because it would be really improbable to have two snowflakes which are identical. How would we sort of evaluate this using algorithmic specified complexity? Well, for the sake of the argument, let's say that the probability of each particular snowflake is 1 in a million. The first thing we could say is, well, does that mean it doesn't snow? Because if the probability of each snowflake is 1 in a million, the odds against snowing seem pretty high. Right? But that doesn't actually make sense because each individual snowflake is not necessarily specified. Instead, we can say, well, what about two snowflakes which are identical? What's the probability of two identical snowflakes? Well, it's 1 in a million times 1 in a million. So it's 1 in a trillion.
10 to the 12th is a trillion, yes. Okay. 1 in a trillion. So we're really getting up
there. So that's really low probability. But the question is, okay, well, how compressible is it? What would it take to describe it? In order to describe it, I have to say, well, two snowflakes are a probability of 1 in a trillion. The question we ask is, how would it take to describe them? Well, we have to describe the 1 in a million, then we just say it's repeated. The effect of this is if we do the math on it, the complexity ends up being about twice as large as the specification. So the Shannon information component of algorithm specified complexity ends up being twice as large as the Kolmogorov complexity version, which means that there's actually a lot of algorithmic specified complexity in two identical snowflakes. And that's effectively why we can say we don't have two identical snowflakes happening, because the odds are fairly small.
Now, I thought one of the interesting examples that you had in the introductory paper, Algorithmic Specified Complexity, this was in the book Engineering of the Ultimate, an Interdisciplinary Investigation of Order and Design in Nature and Craft, edited by Jonathan Bartlett, Dominic Helsmer, and Mark Hall, published in 2014. An interesting example in there is the idea of playing poker. You have a poker hand, and if you have a set of five cards, which constitutes a poker hand, then if you don't do it within the context of anything, it really doesn't have any deep meaning. But in the context of the game of poker, all of a sudden you do have meaning. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. If we take the example of a royal flush, and for those unfamiliar with poker, a royal flush is a king, queen, jack, 10, and an ace, all of the same suit. We call it a royal flush because it has all the royal cards in it. If we just look at this thing, There might arguably be some degree of specification there because I can describe this as a very short pattern. But it's much more interesting to look at this from the perspective of the game of poker, because the game of poker defines certain patterns as being poker hands. And one of those is the royal flush. And the royal flush is the rarest one because there's only four possible ways to get this hand, one for each suit.
And describing how you get that's really short.
Yes, so to describe the hand, I have to say this is the rarest poker hand, which means the royal flush, of spades, and I've told you which cards I have. I don't have to give you any more information.
And what about a straight flush? That requires a longer description, doesn't it?
So a straight flush ends up requiring a longer description because the flush can start anywhere. So I have to tell you both the suit and the first card of my straight. So if I said I have a flush of hearts starting with a 7, and going down, that's longer than me saying I have a royal flush of hearts.
Okay, so the Kolmogorov complexity gets larger because the description becomes longer. And then you have four of a kind. That even takes longer to describe because you have to describe not only the card, like the 10, and you have four of those, but then you have to describe the remaining fifth card.
Ah, yes. I'm forgetting my hands.
You're forgetting your hands. So when is the last time you played poker, Dr. Ewert?
It's been several years.
Several years, okay. This is really interesting because I'm looking at the book on algorithmic specified complexity, Dr. Ewert's chapter, and there is an actual table in here which shows the algorithmic specified complexity of the number of hands in poker. And it turns out that the Royal Flush has 15 bits of algorithmic specified complexity. The straight flush is less with 12 bits. So therefore, this as the meaning of the hand in terms of context reduces all the way down to one pair, which has essentially zero algorithmic specified complexity. So this really matches our intuition as to the algorithmic specified complexity.
Right? Yes, I think it does.
Yeah, very, very fascinating.
That was Robert Marks and Winston Ewert of the Evolutionary Informatics Lab discussing evolutionary informatics and algorithmic specified complexity. Stay tuned to ID the Future for the next segment of this discussion. For more information, you can visit idthefuture.com, and you can get all the updated news and views on the debate over evolution at evolutionnews.org. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.